Welcome to the Cop Doc Podcast. This podcast explores police leadership issues and innovative ideas. The Cop Doc shares thoughts and ideas as he talks with leaders in policing, communities, academia, and other government agencies. And now, please join Dr. Steve Morreale and industry thought leaders as they share their insights and experience on the Cop Doc Podcast.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve Morreale, and you're listening to the Cop Doc Podcast. Today, we have the pleasure of talking to two lieutenants from Gainesville, Florida, the police department in Gainesville, Florida, Lieutenant Charlie Ward and Mark Plord. And they're here to talk about something that's going on for the last little bit to try to develop leaders in their department. So good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Doc.
Morning, Doc.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate your help. So, gentlemen, before we get started to talk about the program that you're involved in, let's talk about the Gainesville Police Department in Florida. Can one of you tell us a thumbnail sketch of what the department is, how big it is, and about Gainesville in the city?
Well, we're in the county of Alachua County. Our department is, I guess when everyone asks how big is your department, everyone talks about the sworn side. So we're budgeted for, I believe, 289 sworn. Currently, we are, I guess, like most agencies, we are down quite a few officers. We have, I think on paper, we're down about 26 officers. But if you actually ask like how many officers could put on a uniform and go shag a call today, we're down closer to 50. We've got several in the academy, some in the FTO program. So again, I know we're no different than most agencies. We're down quite a bit. Gainesville has about 135,000 is our population. But of course, we've got the University of Florida, and I believe that's about 50,000. So it's a decent sized city, decent sized agency for our area. We're one of the larger agencies. Jacksonville, of course, a little bigger than us. And the south of us, going to Orlando, would probably be the next biggest agency. And the rest are relatively smaller agencies around us.
Okay, so you're both serving as lieutenant. And tell us what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. What's your full-time responsibilities?
So day-to-day, right now, I'm one of our day shift watch commanders. And basically what that entails is getting the shift ready, brief in the morning, get the crew out, they hit the road, start answering calls for service and doing cop things. And unfortunately, as comes with this role, I get to generally get to a desk and start doing administrative things, listening to the guys and girls out having fun. So we're like Mark said, we're a little bit short staffed, so guys and girls are humping it from start to finish. And, you know, as the day starts to wind down, I have to start knocking out some paperwork and getting things ready for the next shift.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And then I'm assigned to what's called the Patrol Support Bureau, and we have the canine unit, traffic unit, our airport officers, our field service technicians. So it's like it says, it's basically just a support group for patrol.
So what brought you to my attention, talking to Chief Mike Wynn up here in Pittsfield, and he indicated when I asked, hey, who should I talk to who's doing some innovative things in policing? You were the first names that came out of his mouth. And he talked about a leadership development program. So I'd like you to talk about that. How did that happen? What caused it to happen? And tell the audience what's going on and how it's going.
So it's been going for about 5 years now. We're on our fifth class currently. And Mark can get into the real beginnings. I'll give you kind of how I came into play and the program got started. I get promoted to corporal years ago. And I remember day one, not really even day one, I hadn't been officially made a corporal, but I get told, hey, you're going to be promoted to corporal. I see Mark. First thing he says is, this isn't the end. This is the beginning. And asked if I knew what he was talking about. And I really didn't. I was still overtaken by the announcement that I was going to be promoted. And basically what he said is, hey, you're now on this leadership journey. There's so many things to learn. Do you read? Do you talk to people about leadership? So on and so forth. And as those conversations progressed and I grew, I got promoted to sergeant. And at that point, Mark had been a sergeant for a little while. And we started talking, hey, you know, where are we at as an agency? What does our agency provide leadership wise for those of us that are getting, you know, promoted? What do we have? And at the time we had a lot of management classes. Hey, here are things that need to be done. These boxes need to be checked. And there had not been, and it's not just our agency, I want to make that clear. I think this industry as a whole, we didn't have a consistent platform for talking and learning leadership and dealing with people and building relationships. And so the more we talked, the more the program got started. And I'll let Mark kick off. It originated from some books and leadership styles we saw elsewhere. I'll let him get into that. But, you know, that's how it started from my perspective and on my side of the table.
And then, Dr. Mike, from my point, where it's started was, I was back in 2011, our chief put on a week-long, it was called a leadership training block. And it was more, you know, I think it was more of a management style, like Charlie, referred to as boxes that need to be checked, how to do use of force, how to do the timesheets, et cetera. There's very little leadership training in there. However, what we did have a professor from Florida State University that did a block on leadership, and he passed out a sheet with a bunch of books that he suggested reading. And I really didn't think too much about it, but our current captain, or my current captain right now, was a sergeant at the time. I was a corporal on the sergeant's list. He had to leave early that day, and he's walking out the door. He turns to the group and he holds up this piece of paper with these books on it. And he says, "Hey guys, there's something to this. I suggest you guys read this." And honestly, I didn't think I was going to get promoted to sergeant. So I said, well, if I ever get promoted, I'll start reading leadership book, not thinking it would ever come to fruition. Well, one day I got the call and I was promoted to sergeant. I'm like, oh my God, I can start reading leadership books. And so I went home, I Googled leadership book, and three books came up: The Five Levels of Leadership by John Maxwell, The Frontline Leader by Chris Van Gorder, and Rising Through the Ranks by Mike Wynn. And I started reading them and I got hooked on learning about leadership. And the more I read, the more I realized how much I don't know about leadership. And so one of the books that I just talked about was The Frontline Leader by Chris Van Gorder. Chris is the CEO of Scripps Health out in San Diego, California. It's a conglomerate of about, I think they have five or six hospitals. And what's interesting about Chris was one time he was actually a police officer years and years ago, and he was hurt in the line of duty and had to take a medical retirement. And he actually went back and started as a security guard at the hospital where he worked, and went back to school and worked his way up and became CEO of Scripps. And what he realized when he became the CEO, there was so much infighting within the organization and between the hospitals, and morale was terrible. The company was losing millions and millions of dollars. And he said, you know, as the CEO, I don't think I can write a memo and change the culture of this agency. He goes, but I'll bet you my frontline leaders can. So he formed what is called the Scripps Leadership Academy. And we have modeled ours after that. It's basically a year-long program. We have anywhere from 15 to 20. We have a lot of sergeants, corporals, informal leaders. We have some civilian staff in our program. And we meet one day a month. And last year, then we have a graduation, and then we bring in the new group. And you brought up Chief Wynn in the beginning. He has been so instrumental in the success of our program. He comes down twice a year, usually in February and November. I think this year it's March and November. And I'll give Charlie credit. Charlie, when we were figuring out some guest speakers to bring in, he goes, well, why don't we call the author of this book? I said, Charlie, there ain't a chance in the world you're going to get this chief to come down to Florida. Charlie cold called him, had a great conversation, and he's been coming down twice a year now for 5 years. So we're so indebted to him. And here we are with you because of him.
That's terrific. So let's talk a little bit about that. Clearly, what I'm hearing you talk about is that you have to invest in your people and you have to care about your people. You have to relate with your people, because if you walk out of that building pissed off, then the rest of the people you're going to encounter, you're going to come off potentially with a surly attitude. So leadership has a language unto itself. Charlie, you started to use some of the words, whether it's empowerment or it's empathy or it is accountability, expectations, relationships, you name it. So you say that there's between 15 and 20 people who enroll in this academy. And so where do they come from? Is this voluntary?
Yes, sir. So toward the end of the calendar year, we'll put out a notice saying, hey, we're starting to prep for next year's class. Submit. Basically, it's an application. It's not a formal application, but hey, submit paperwork with your desire to partake in the class. And we kind of lay it out. Hey, it's year long. We meet once a month. Make sure your schedule can handle it. And we start taking the quote unquote applications at that point. And in general, there's been probably each year, this past year, we didn't have any. But prior to that, there would be a couple people that unfortunately weren't able to partake. And from what I can recall, every time was either scheduling on behalf of the agency staffing wise, which just our staffing didn't allow for it, or they had a scheduling conflict. But aside from that, everybody that's put in has been able to partake in the class, and those that were not able to in 1 year would be given the opportunity in the later year. So that's how we kick it off. We start taking the interest there. It is voluntary. To be honest with you, I don't believe in going and telling somebody you need to go learn about leadership. Now, I think Mark may differ a little bit with me on that, but my belief is either they want to learn. Leadership is about learning, growing, in my opinion, getting better, building relationship, acknowledging error. And I want to be around individuals when we start talking leadership who have those same desires.
So the two of you, it seems to me, were, I use the word genesis, but you had this dream, you had this idea, couldn't do it on your own. You had to sell some. How'd you do that? How did you deal with the chief and the command staff to ask them to give you a chance to give this a try?
That's a great question. You know, I think it's in most organizations, but definitely I think in law enforcement, I know in our organization, been historically when someone was promoted, you know, a memo was sent out department wide. They got a 5% raise. This magic wand was waved and poof, here they are, a supervisor and a leader. So we kind of went with that kind of argument we set up a meeting with the chief. I think our major
command staff.
All the command staff was there. We put a PowerPoint PowerPoint together, and we sat, they gave us a half hour, and we sat down with them and we presented it. And thankfully, and again, we're so appreciative to this day that they gave us the blessing and we went forward with it.
It was, I mean, it was much like we are right here. It was a presentation on our part per se, but it was a lot of conversation, a lot of, hey, you know, Chief, especially for me, I was a fairly new sergeant at the time. I want to learn to do better. This organization deserves people that want to do better in their supervisory roles. Part of that's leadership, and I'm missing something. And here's an opportunity to bring leadership to the agency consistently, 1 week at a time, every couple of years, or this is something from inside the agency that a couple of your supervisors want to do to make the people better. And like Mark said, to much to their credit, everybody in the room acknowledged that, yes, we needed to do better for the leadership at the department, and that they liked the program we presented. And here we are, five classes later, and we're talking along.
So we're talking to Mark and Charlie Ward and Mark Plourd at the Gainesville Police Department, talking about the Leadership Academy that they established, and now in its fifth year. So talk us through the sort of things that this consists of. What kind of learning goes on? What kind of investment do people have to make in their own future? Tell me what kind of a class it is. Is it lecture? Is it discussion? Is there writing? Is there reflection? How do you drive through these ideas of leadership, these concepts?
Great. Again, I'll start off just talking about, I guess, how our typical day goes. Every day starts off with a question and answer session, about an hour to an hour and a half with our chief and or one of our assistant chiefs. And it's basically the class they're given a very unique opportunity that a lot of officers in most agencies don't get that forum with the chief. So they have about an hour and a half to ask questions about things going on in the agency, the chief's or assistant chief's leadership philosophy, what they want from the troops, what they expect from their frontline leaders. After that, we have a book that we go through, one or two books a year. For, and then we always read The Five Levels of Leadership by John Maxwell. So they have reading assignments coming into class, and then we'll have almost like a book review, a book club, we call it. We'll talk about that for a while. We always bring in a guest speaker. For instance, again, we talked about Chief Wynn, Chris Van Gorder from California, from Scripps, usually does a Zoom with us. In January, our first class this year, we brought in Ed Jimenez, who is the CEO of UF Health Shands, which is our level one trauma center here in town. And he's kicked off every year for us in January. We have different guest speakers. We have Chad Lanigan, who is he's a lieutenant in Aurora, Colorado. He was a brand new lieutenant the night of the Aurora, the Century 21 movie shooting. We bring in Tina Jekyll, who does a lot of mental health and with officers and things of that nature. So we try to bring in a lot of different guest speakers. After that, we have a session called Closing the Gap, where we will bring in folks from different areas, sometimes within the agency, sometimes outside, people that we work with maybe on a regular basis, but we don't know much about what they do or their expectations. So for instance, next leadership class is Monday. We're bringing in some folks from the Combined Communication Center, our dispatchers, just to share, just we start building the relationship. We had end of the year, the last 6 months, we take a part of the class and we divide the class into groups and they do a group project, something to try to address within our agency to make it a little better, et cetera. What am I missing, Charlie?
Well, no, just to go back, you know, you mentioned what do the individuals have to invest in? First and foremost, they have to invest themselves into the, you know, this path of leadership, this desire to learn how to do better for the people they work with and work around. So that's one investment. You take time. I mean, we do it a day, a month, and sometimes with scheduling. I mean, people have families, kids, hobbies, staffing here at the department. So the time investment, though you wouldn't think a day a month is a big deal, it really is. And that's just to go to the class. So we talk about, you know, Mark mentioned that it'll be book assignments. So what'll happen is between the class, so the first 6 months, we're going through five levels of leadership. They have to read the intro, and then each level we want them to go through before the next class. And then we discuss that. Well, that takes time for them to sit down. Some individuals, I like audio books myself. I can really get through some material driving around, but that takes time away from whatever it is they want to do outside of work. And then the one important thing we wind the day up with is we call it lessons learned. And it's a kind of a roundtable discussion with everybody that says, hey, what did you take away from today? And sometimes people took away the same. There was something that was brought up, some topic that really struck most of the people. And then other times everybody has something different they learned, but they each have to contribute in some way toward that discussion. And we try to make it very open. The forum is very open. It gives people the opportunity to discuss, and it's about learning and growing and getting involved in leadership. And that means we're going to have differences of opinion. So people have to come in knowing that, you know what, there's something I'm going to say that somebody else is not going to agree with. And we're going to have an open, honest discussion about it. And we walk away patting each other on the back and say, you know what, I may not agree with what you're saying, but I understand what your point of view is. You know what I'm saying?
Well, isn't that just a lesson in working the street too? Because we have to understand why people don't necessarily like police, why people are calling on us to fund, what the Black Lives Lives Matter movement is about, not just what we see, but what's underneath it. So it causes, or potentially, to understand the other side, whether we agree with it or not. A couple of things. It sounds to me like you are pushing for no passive learning. It's active learning. You are actively engaged. But how do you facilitate that discussion? Who runs those? Who draws people into those conversations? Is it you two?
Yeah, that's a good question, Doug. You know, Charlie and I, we have said from the beginning, you know, we don't think that we're the great leaders. We don't claim to be. We don't teach leadership, so to speak. We kind of facilitate the discussion. And one of the things we get routinely, almost every in our end of year evaluations, that the folks say about the class that they really liked is, one, they get to meet and be with folks that they usually wouldn't get to know in the agency if it wasn't for this class. Because, I mean, it's like, you know, the first class is always usually everyone's real quiet and timid. But I tell them all the time, by December, we're going to be all very, very close. And the other thing that people say in the evals all the time is they get so much out of our group discussion. And Doc, some of them get really heated. You know, some voices get raised every now and then, but they always comes back around to some really good conclusions and real good discussions that really opens a lot of eyes. And usually people will say at the end is, I didn't know this. I've learned this in the lessons learned segments. It was usually something that comes out of our group discussion.
Well, certainly a good facilitator will guide that discussion and let it happen. All right. So I see you're emotional, you're upset, you've got a point of view. Where can we go from here? And one of the things several of the things that's being discussed over and over again is de-escalation, is mental health and mental health interventions, those kinds of things. I can only presume that these are the things that are issues that you're talking about how we handle them, peeling back the onion, what could we do better? Is that a good...
100%. Yeah, okay. If you go down, and when you look at this list of different speakers we have come, it's such a wide variety. So just two, going off of what you just mentioned with Tina Jekyll, I mean, that's her background 100%, is mental health and mental health in law enforcement and military. So we bring her and she generally is a 4 to 5 hour block of discussion. And then after that, it's open forum, bouncing ideas back and forth between the people in the class and then what she has seen based on all of her teachings and experiences at other agencies. And then flip the script a little bit with Chad Lanigan. His entire day is discussion on critical incident, managing and supervising a critical incident. In this case, one of the worst ones in the country's history. And then what happened after, and going into that mental health portion of law enforcement that quite some time had not been discussed in depth, and the things he experienced, what he saw, and what he would have liked, what he has improved upon, and what he would recommend, hey, here at the Gainesville Police Department, if this ever happens, here's some things that are going to happen. With your staff, they're going to go through some of these things, and there's a process in place to help them through it. Here's what we did. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I was just about to talk about that. In other words, what about the impact on the things that police officers are called on to do? And if you're in charge, what do you do? Do you talk about them, or you just bury them? And I think that's important. Here's something that is jumping at me, and that is when you have selected people who are speaking, it's not just police. And that's so impressive, because I think that we in policing, and I count myself as a former practitioner, we have had a tendency to look only at policing, and leading is about people no matter what. So you bring in somebody from Shands, and you bring in somebody from Scripps, and here are outsiders that are talking about leadership to police. Does that convert well? Does that translate well to the people who were in the room?
Absolutely. And I think that was part of our focus in the beginning. We did not want only law enforcement. You just said the reason why, because it's about people. It's about relationships. And the people don't change just because we're cops. We do different jobs and we may witness and see different things and feel different things and act a different way than some other types of professions that are out there. But you're still working with people, and people still have feelings and people still have emotions. And we all interject our own personalities into our day-to-day work. So the same, if we want to call it problems. So, I mean, we have problems within our agency, just like every other agency and every other business out there. But the problems, they may not be the same outside of law enforcement, but they're similar. So when you talk to organizations and leaders from that arena, it still correlates in the way we interact with people and the relationships we build. It's the same.
And you know, at first, what cops would say, what does he know about my job? What the hell is he going to offer me? Where does the change begin to happen?
Well, you know, I think leadership is leadership, whether it's in law enforcement, outside of law enforcement, and, you know, the speakers we brought in. And I think it goes back to not the speakers, but the books we've read. Most of the books we've read about leadership are non-law enforcement.
So one of the first books I read, and this was before Mark and I were having discussions, I read it because on the personal side, I can be a bit of an introvert. So I wanted to kind of start working my way out of that if I could. How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie, from early 1900s, I believe. And he's talking business. But in the book, not the whole book, but a good portion, it's all relationships and how you interact with people. people along the way. And that translates day to day what we do. He's still one of my favorite books. And this isn't a law enforcement officer. This is decades and decades before I was born even. And yet the material, because it's dealing with people, still translates to what we need to do today.
Well, to me, it's like Peel's Principles of Policing. Those still ring true today. And those were back from the 1800s in England. And sometimes we have to sit back and say, and I think the question you have to ask, in my estimation, is why are you here? Why are you staying? And is there a pride when they finish? Is there a pride in completion of your program?
I'd say, yeah. We've gotten some really great reviews on our end of year evals. This is the best leadership class I've taken. This is the best class I've taken. We have at the end, we have a ceremony. Everyone gets a plaque, a certificate, and you walk around the building. We've had 65 that have gone through our academy. And the ones that are now have their own offices, you will see our cubicles. You'll see their Leadership Academy plaque sitting in their desk, hanging on their wall. So yeah, I think there is a lot of pride. And again, and hopefully that's a right one. I think one of the main goals that Charlie and I have for the Leadership Academy is we want when they get here, we want them to realize that leadership isn't a destination. You don't get promoted and say, oh, wow, I made it. This is just the beginning. We hope that when they leave after the year, they realize that leadership is a skill, that's something that can be acquired, practiced, developed. And I think we see that here.
Over and over.
So as you grow with 65 people, how do you measure the outcome, the change?
That is a tough one. And I wish there was a metric. And I would bet at least once a week we have this discussion and it give you the question, have we made a difference? A goal in the beginning was, can we shift culture within our agency from where it was? And we have shifted the culture. When I say we, it's the group of people that have been involved in this class. We as a whole, and that's a bunch of people. The culture has changed. Is it what we thought it would be? I don't know. And I don't think there's a metric, but I think if you go and ask, we have different people that have gone through the class. Hey, after this year-long discussion, if you will, with everybody, this class you went to for a whole year, did it make a difference in your work life? Or even if it didn't in your work life, did it in your home life? Was there a difference made with you as a person? And I have not had anybody that I've asked that yet say no. So if there's a metric, maybe that's it. 100% of the people I've asked, did this class make a positive difference in some fashion with you? Everyone that I've asked has said yes.
I think leadership is like, if you look at it like either when you go on a diet or you go into some, you know, you're going to exercise more day to day, you'd get so frustrated if you look for changes. But I think if we look back at in the year, each year we look back and now we look back 5 years, I think we've made a change. And Charlie alluded to something too. I think one of the nicest compliments we got about our program was actually from one of the sergeants who went through our first year. At the very end of the year, when we were going around the table and saying, you know, what did you get out of this program? He said, this program made me a better father.
Mm. Yeah. That was impactful. Yeah. That was huge. And it's something I never considered until Sergeant Hayes said that. Yep. Until he said that, I'm like, wow. And this class impacted somebody's life outside of work in a positive way.
That's why you do it. And that's nice feedback for sure. I think that's really neat. When we talk about evidence-based policing or we talk about procedural justice, these conversations that you have there, what about using teachable moments and kind of driving that through the academy? Are you doing that? You see what happens in Minneapolis and George Floyd. And it seems to me an agency must have a conversation about that, or it may repeat what happened. How do you have those conversations about take this opportunity, guys and gals, to talk to the people who you are invested in, who you're responsible for, and let's see what we can do to minimize those things from happening in the Gainesville Police Department? Are those conversations that you have?
They do end up happening. And I cannot quote the year, but as procedural justice at our department started being discussed, rolled out, if you will, it naturally rolled into our class and the discussions were had. Hey, is our agency doing what is expected? And surprisingly, the answer across the board was, yeah, if you want to look at bullet points, do we do this? Yes. Do we do this? Yes. Do we do this? Absolutely. We felt as an agency, we were way ahead of the curve. So we have those discussions in the Leadership Academy. The open forum brings it to the forefront, especially when unfortunate incidents that unfold across the country, but the ripple effect is nationwide and it rolls itself into our academy discussion. Hey, what is the thought? What is your perception of Minneapolis? What happened in Minneapolis? The after effects? What would we do here if we start having the same type of the riot situations that they're experiencing? What would we do here? Have we discussed it? And what is the plan going to be? And it's not something that the Leadership Academy itself is going to be able to deal with. That's an agency stance to be taken. But the discussion starts in there, and then it furthers itself outside of the class to the administration. Hey, have we thought about this? Maybe the topic comes up and, you know, we have a good honest discussion in the class and there's some resolution that come about that we can push off to the administration. And hey, this was discussed in the class, you know, take it or leave it, basically. That's not the best way to put it. We discussed this in the class and this is what we think may be an opportunity or option for the agency in a given situation. Does that make sense?
It does, because one of the questions I was going to ask is how do you move it outside? You've got 15 or 20 brains in there, right? 15 or 20 people in that class. My concern with training has always been we send you to training. It's in your head. We pay for it. And then it rests in your head. We don't share it anywhere else. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is when elements of a discussion come out, somehow you're transmitting it back to command staff.
So the great thing, when you go back to the day-to-day lineup, we start every day with really two topics, which we didn't go on one because it's a smaller portion, but we have a captain that also sits in the class with us as a facilitator as well. So that captain will have some of the information that's needed when people ask questions. He or she may have those answers. And on the flip side, as the discussion happens, if there's something that he or she can take back to the administrative level, the upper command staff, then you have that transfer of information back and forth. Followed up with that is the question and answer sessions with the chief and or assistant chiefs. The topics come up. So if there is a new rollout of a policy and people don't either understand it, maybe they disagree with it, whatever the case may be, naturally it's going to come up during that question and answer session, and it gives the bosses the opportunity to say, here's why we're doing X, Y, or Z. On the flip side, as there's discussion at the command level on things that are happening elsewhere in the country and concerns they have, not that the agency's doing wrong, but that, hey, perception of law enforcement is what it is. Here's what we're thinking about doing in the future to offset that. Then they can push the information out to the Leadership Academy group, which hopefully then takes it back to their respective areas.
Terrific. Mark, I think myself, you said something earlier, and that is, you know, we're not leadership gurus. I'm not a leadership trainer. I don't necessarily agree with that based on what you're telling me. But I will tell you, and I think it's important, it's not one and done, as you experience, right? Leadership is an evolutionary process. I've been a student of leadership probably for 30 years, and I still don't know it. I'm still learning constantly. I learn from students. I really do learn from students. And I also think that you recognize that leadership is a process. It's not a position. You know, we started to talk about the language of leadership, the process of leadership. And is that something that is driven through the academy? That concept that those bars and those stars and those stripes do not in itself make you a leader. Your actions make you a leader. Your relationships, your reflective ability to reflect on what you did and how you might have screwed up so that you learn from that. But what's your take on that?
Absolutely. One of the things, especially in John Maxwell's five levels of leadership that we probably spend the most time on is that first level, which is positional leadership. And just because you're given a leadership position, like you said, you're given the stripes or the bars, that didn't make you a leader. It's an opportunity to become a leader. And so we bring that up constantly in our group. You know, this is a journey. This is not a destination. We've all got a lot to learn. And
so management and leadership, I would think that's the first thing that you will talk about, the differences and the distinctive differences. It's hard to do because I think that the idea of leadership is almost misplaced. Management is leadership and leadership is management. Well, how would you address that? What's your take on that? What are the distinct or subtle differences between the two? And most of you have to do both.
Yeah, I think they actually complement each other very well. However, I mean, I look at management as you manage things, you lead people, you manage checkbooks or we manage rosters, we manage our timesheets, we manage our report, and then we actually lead the people. I think you need both, but I think historically there's just so much emphasis is put much more on the management side of things than the leadership side of things.
You know what I think that is? I think because going back to how do you evaluate what you did or how good you were, you can effectively look at different management topics or decisions and say, this was good, this was good, this was good, this was bad, this person completed X, Y, and Z. But when you flip to leadership, how do you say this person did good leader? You know, there's nothing in our manual, there's nothing that says, you know what, today Charlie did a good job in leadership because of this. You know what I'm saying?
I do. So you rolled out a while ago problem solving, and I read that. Tell me the mindset of the people you are hiring and the transformation you attempt. In other other words, here are the expectations. How do you drive those expectations, both of you, to the people who work for you? How do you have those conversations? Now, we're not talking about the Leadership Academy, but we're talking about bringing somebody in, sitting them down. This is the Gainesville Police Department. We have pride. These are our expectations. How do your sergeants and lieutenants and corporals have those conversations?
So in my realm right now, it's probably a little simpler because I'm with the group every day. I mean, we start the day together, and the expectations are easier to lay out because I can have that discussion in our briefing. Hey, you know, whether it's something for the day. Right now, we've had a significant increase in traffic fatalities. So the agency's desire right now for especially the patrol side of the agency, the operations staff, is let's go out and do a couple of things. We want to educate. We want to get, you know, we're a community-oriented policing agency. So let's go out and talk with the individuals in the area where these problems are happening. It's the biggest one right now is Port Arcane. We have two locations, one being near campus. It makes sense. You have a lot of people crossing streets, right? So let's go out and talk with them about safety, traffic safety, pedestrian safety. On top of that, let's do some enforcement. Let's increase our presence in the hopes of decreasing or minimizing loss of life due to traffic crashes. And that is the agency has a number of goals, but that's one of the top ones now coming through my command. So in the briefing, hey, this is the desire for the current period we're in. We need to decrease traffic fatalities, or at least make an attempt to. Here's how we're going to do it. Here's what I need from, you know, the officers that work this sector. If you're not out doing enforcement, education is an option. And yeah, I don't know if that answers.
It does. Let me begin to wrap up. What are you doing to try to change and improve the academy? What are the things that you're saying, we tried that, let's try this? And what's on the horizon for the academy?
I think that's a couple things. One, I think, you know, we're always looking to bring in different speakers just to give our folks a different leadership philosophy. I think in one of the things that we are always trying to, we're going to talk about this, but one of the most difficult things about the Leadership Academy, we go through this every year, is that if some of our folks are not happy with administration, let's say, they think that all, you know, Captain so-and-so or Assistant Chief so-and-so or the Chief should be in here listening to this guest speaker. They need to hear this. And one of the things we're always trying to, we always have to come back to is this is not about anyone else besides us. This is not about changing our administration. This is about us as a group and what can, when we leave each day, when we get done with our training class and we go back to our little worlds of GPD, what impact we make for the people that we work. So I think we're always striving to emphasize that.
So the first couple of years, we focused on, aside from the open forums and the group discussions and the speakers, we had a couple different books and we would go through those books. And at the end of the year, we sat back and looked for the first couple of years and said, you know, was that effective? Was the discussion brought about from the book, was it effective? And some of the books were yes, some of them were no. So obviously the ones that were, nah, that didn't produce what we wanted to, we weeded those out. But it got to a point where we're like, you know, is there a way to do something out of the Leadership Academy that will bring value back to the agency aside from the individual growth that comes? And so we implemented the last 6 months, we brought in group projects. So we spend an hour of that day each month. Groups are put together and they come up on their own a plan or an area within the department that they can improve or bring value back to the agency. And they spend the next 6 months working on this particular problem that they have identified. And in the end, they present it to the chief and assistant chief and say, hey, we saw this is a problem. Here's a solution, right? That's always, you know, people complain all the time, but we don't hear solutions as much as we would like. And
Charlie, are those solutions actually adopted at times?
So I'll give you one last year the last class that was phenomenal was that we had some night shift personnel. And they said, you know what would be awesome? I have seen lights that different agencies have given to their night shift officers that clip onto their vest. That it's a small light, it illuminates. Like, let's say you're out either taking down information on a notepad, writing a ticket, whatever it may be at night. You know, normally you stick your flashlight under your arm and that illuminates, but it's cumbersome and, you know, officer safety wise could present a problem. Well, these lights clip onto your vest, so you're not having to hold it. And we don't have that. And it would be nice to have that. So the group, you know, put their heads together, worked with some of the administrative personnel at the department, found money, purchased lights, and rolled it out to the entire night shift.
Great. In other words, positive stuff. All right. So two things as we wind down. Given that you've been at this for 5 years, given that you're a good-sized police department and right next to UF, have other agencies taken notice? Have other agencies come to look at what you do? In other words, have you provided potential model for what other agencies might do to do something similar?
Not really. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think we've done a really good job of publicizing what we've done. Don't get me wrong. We we would love to, Charlie and I could talk about this all day.
Yes.
And yeah, we would love the opportunity to share this with other agencies maybe that are interested. We submitted just this week a proposal to speak at the IACP at one of their breakout sessions.
Great. That's a way to spread the word for sure. Yeah. How would people get in touch with you guys?
Email, phone.
Yeah. Email, phone.
We can provide you whatever.
Okay. We'll put that on the show notes for people who may be listening, which is terrific. And I appreciate. So on your bucket list, what's on your bucket list, Charlie?
So for the Leadership Academy?
No, maybe not for the Leadership Academy. Your bucket list. What do you want to do? Take your cop hat and badge off. What do you want to do? Right. So what's something that you would like to do?
Charlie's goal. I've got a couple of things. One. So here's my future. I'm going to end up out west and I'm going to hunt a lot. That's my bucket list.
What's your definition of west? Where are you going to go? So Idaho?
I think Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, Montana, Arizona. And I mean, the west, not quite the California and Oregon and Washington, but just short of that. I love that area of the country. I go out there and visit as much as I can. I love to hunt. And so me getting to spend as much time out there and getting my family involved in that that's my bucket list. That's my goal. Hopefully that's where I wind up in several years and get to close out my time here on earth in the wilderness of the western part of the country.
Terrific. How about you, Mark?
I've been working on my PhD the last few years, and I've kind of hit the last few 6 months is the pandemic years. Just I'm not putting as much effort into it as I should. So my bucket list I'm on the dissertation side of now. I've done all the classes. So just want to push through and get it done. So that's my.
Where are you working on it?
Nova Southeastern.
That's where I got mine.
Awesome.
Where I got mine. If I can help, let me know. Well, we've come to the end. We've been lucky enough to talk to two lieutenants from the Gainesville Police Department, Charlie Ward and Mark Plourd. They, along with others, suggested the development of the Leadership Academy at Gainesville, Florida Police Department. It has been a pleasure to talk with both of you gentlemen.
Thanks, Doc. It's been quite an honor to speak with you as well. So thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, we're hoping that what you've done and others that will hear this may very well consider this, because the last thing I'll say to you, I think that while we model ourselves in the likeness of the military, we don't really do that good a job. Nobody's going to get promoted in the military without going to training before and after. And you know what happens with policing. Congratulations, you're in. You start tonight. What the hell am I going to do this? I can see the chuckles and I can hear the chuckles. So we can certainly do a better job of preparing people. And I appreciate the work that you're doing. It's very impressive. You've been listening to Steve Morielli in Boston, and this is the Cop Doc Podcast. Make sure you listen to upcoming episodes. Thanks for listening today.
Thanks for listening to the Cop Doc Podcast with Dr. Steve Morielli. Steve is a retired law enforcement practitioner and manager turned academic and scholar from Worcester State University. Please tune into the Cop Doc Podcast for regular episodes of interviews with thought leaders in policing.
Before you go, if you'd like to reach out, comment, provide feedback, or have a topic that could be considered to explore in the future, contact me via LinkedIn, Facebook, or send me an email at copdoc.podcast@gmail.com. That's copdoc.podcast@gmail.com. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes where we'll be talking with a distinguished professor from Virginia Commonwealth University, the former commissioner of the Boston Police Department, and the academic director of the Baltimore Police Academy, to name just a few. I'm very happy now that the Cop Doc Podcast is listed on Law Enforcement Today's podcast network. Among other police-related podcasts I'd recommend, when you have time, I suggest you take time to listen to Law Enforcement Today Radio with Jay Wiley. You might also listen to Pat Fitzgibbons on his podcast, The CJ Evolution, or Policing Matters from Police One with Jim Dudley. You can find links to these recommended police-related podcasts on our website at www.copdocpodcast.com. Intermittently, you'll hear from me in micro-podcasts called Reflections and Ruminations on Leadership. These short pieces will raise leadership and organizational issues and discuss problems and practices, as well as the elements of leadership for you to consider. I look forward to continuing to talk with colleagues in the field of policing, criminal justice think tanks, community, academics, and researchers. And for those of you still in the trenches, I wish you my best and implore you to stay safe, stay healthy, and thank you for what you do to keep our community safe. This is Steve Morielli in Boston. Thanks so much for listening to the Cop Doc Podcast.